Welcome to another episode of The Double Take. Terrence and I are ready to believe you as we celebrate not only the 40th anniversary of the original Ghostbusters movie, but also about to be released is the next chapter in the franchise, Frozen Empire. This movie is a follow-up to Ghostbusters Afterlife. And I'm telling you, don't sleep on Afterlife. It's delicious. What better reason to bring this classic movie to the podcast? I had really so much fun watching this movie again. I forgot how great these actors are, especially when they're together. So I don't know if you're the gatekeeper or if you're the keymaster, but sit back, grab your bag of Stay Puft Marshmallows, and enjoy the ride. And I promise not to make any more puns.
Ghosts.
Hello, Ghostbusters.
They're real.
You do? You have?
They're here. Ghostbusters.
Hey, anybody see a ghost?
They catch the ghost that won't stay dead. They're armed. They're dangerous.
Try to imagine all life as you know it stopping instantaneously and every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light.
All right, that's bad. Okay, all right, important safety tip. Thanks, Egon.
They're professionals.
Oh, I'm the chairman of the largest paranormal removal company in America.
You see it?
They're all that stand between you and the end of the world.
The city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
Real wrath of God type stuff.
Exactly.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the sky.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Your girlfriend lives in the corner penthouse of Spook Central.
You want this body?
Is this a trick question?
Got your stick?
Hold!
Beat him up!
Smoke him!
Make him hard!
Ready!
Ghostbusters. Starring Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Sigourney Weaver, Harold Ramis, Rick Moranis. Coming to save the world.
Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters.
We came, we saw, we kicked it.
All right, well, welcome back to the Double Take podcast. I am Mark, of course, and with me, as always, Mr. Terrence. Good morning, sir.
How's it going, Mark?
Things are good, brother. Things are good. This movie today, 40 years ago this year, we got one of the funniest, at least at the time, although I still feel holds up.
Still holds up, yeah.
For sure. And I'm talking about Ghostbusters. Let's just get right to that. Ghostbusters was such a kind of a groundbreaking movie. You know, you had the cast, the one of the funniest casts of SNL, essentially, in this, you know, teaming up to do things. And it was pretty groundbreaking. So today, that's the show today, man. Ghostbusters. I was really excited when we talked about it. It came up, and it was a unanimous choice for both you and I to get to this movie.
All-time favorite.
Yeah. You want to give us a quick rundown? It's 40 years ago. If you haven't seen it, too bad for you.
Yeah. I think by now anybody listening to us knows what we're about. So we're in tune with our taste in movies. But of course. Ghostbusters, I'll go through it real quick. It's set in New York City. There's sort of an outbreak of ghosts, paranormal activity, and these guys that are sort of on the fringes of the university life, science, they're sort of crackpots slash grifters, decide to open up shop to become the Ghostbusters, and they're going to be the ones that you call when you need help with a ghost, a spook, a specter, and they'll come and take care of it for you. So hijinks ensue. We see a lot of ghosts. We see a plot of Gozer the Gozerian, an ancient Sumerian god, is trying to make its way back into the world to end life as we know it, basically.
Not Babylonian. There's a big difference.
Right. Big difference between Babylon and Sumeria, as we come to find out. But yeah, the Ghostbusters are up to the task, and they save the day in the end.
This movie to me is so, I don't realize how quotable this movie becomes.
Oh, one of the all-time
as I'm rewatching movies. This.
So many lines.
Like I wish I was watching this with a room full of people.
Yeah.
That we're all just having to, like, we'd never get through the movie because we'd be pausing it and rewinding it.
And there's so many lines. You could just walk up to someone in the street and say any of 25 different lines from this movie and they'll know exactly what you're talking about.
I instantly called my brother when I was done because I know he would appreciate such a movie.
Yeah.
And we spent 20 minutes just talking about
different
scenes.
I don't know anybody that doesn't like Ghostbusters. It's my wife's favorite movie. Probably should have brought her here. She'd be good at talking about it. But yeah, this is kind of one of those universal movies where I think that's what they try to do now is they make movies for everybody and they end up kind of being for nobody. But in the past, like you've got these classics that they just like this. If you think about it, this movie's just kind of out of its mind. Like it's a comedy from these guys that came from like an SNL background, improv background. And it's got a really cool plot. Like it's not just simply slapstick silliness the whole time. But they infuse it with all these jokes and great writing, and it all comes together to become an all-timer.
And, you know, Halloween's everywhere are thankful because
it's
forever a Halloween costume no matter what. You know, you could always be
Stranger Things brought it back, all the kids wearing the Ghostbusters costumes.
The
Not that it ever really went away, but.
Right. Yeah, the Goldbergs was another one.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just, it's awesome. It's awesome.
Yeah, and I guess we should mention where it's the 40th anniversary. You said that. And also the new one is coming out, Frozen Kingdom, right? Is coming out. In
Frozen something.
Yeah. But Ghostbusters Afterlife, we'll get into that. We'll get into the sequels and all. That was a fun one. But yeah, it's kind of made a revival in recent times because they had Ghostbusters. The first one was in 1984. The second one they made a few years later. And then there was a long period without any of them. But now it's become much more of a current cultural touchstone once again. So
yeah, they're trying to bring it back a little bit. I think they had a couple failed tries.
Oh, yeah, we'll get into that.
we'll get into the sequels in a little bit, I think, right? Anyway, so in 1984, this movie, the budget was about $30 million. So some of the production notes on this was when – so Dan Aykroyd wrote this movie, right? So he
– Him and Harold Ramis, right, co-wrote it together?
Yeah. It was initially Aykroyd's idea.
He really got it going, yeah.
Yep. So they went in, they convinced Bill Murray to do it, which he's the big name attached to it, of course, right?
Yep.
And then when they went to Ivan
Reitman, I think you say,
and got him to direct. So basically, they just they went to the studio, said, "Hey, we'll do it for $30 million," and I forget what month that was, but they had like 9 months to put this movie together. They're like, "You can do it if you can push it out by the summer of '84," which is exactly what they did.
Mm-hmm.
So tight window, but they did it, and. It was awesome because, I mean, this thing made $300 million at the box office. Like, it was a summer hit in 84. And in 84, there was some pretty decent movies. This was number two overall internationally. Number one, Beverly Hills Cop.
Okay.
You can't go against Beverly Hills Cop. I mean, Eddie Murphy in his prime. Like, there's some ties to Eddie Murphy to this movie, which we'll get into in a little bit, too. But Temple of Doom came out that year. That did $180 million. Gremlins, Karate Kid came out in 84. Police Academy, the first one, which is probably the best
before
one.
Before it got too off the rails.
Yeah, before there was 27 more. And of course, Footloose. Footloose is a great movie.
Yep.
So those all came out in 84. So just to give you an idea of what was out around that time and what it went up against, and Ghostbusters was number two. So if you're not a fan of Ghostbusters, you should be. And I was trying to think when I was watching this, we grew up watching the show or movie. If, like, your kids or my kids would watch it now, like...
My kids love it. We've actually showed it to them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've got a little something I want to talk about later about that.
Okay.
We maybe showed it to them a little too soon, but yeah, my kids love it. We all went to the movies and saw the most recent one that came out a year or two ago.
Afterlife.
Afterlife. We're looking forward to the new one. We'll probably go to the movies to see that all together, so...
I'm thinking more of the, like, the graphics and the special effects in this movie.
I mean,
It's 84, so there's definitely some scenes...
Well, you know what? My notes was all the practical effects they did, I thought still looked great. It was really great looking with that. But the computer stuff is a bit rough. Like when the gargoyle dog thing chases Rick Moranis through the park, it's a little rough looking. Any of the like Slimer stuff looks okay, but like he goes through the wall and anything like that. Anything practical looks great. That was one of the things that really stood out to me was like when they got the slime actually dripping or things like that. But yeah, when it's actually just using the computers, it shows its age quite a bit.
I think the Marshmallow Man was pretty realistic for you.
It looked good, yeah. I read they used shaving cream for the actual marshmallow that was on him. But yeah, that looked great.
So tell me about the director. Tell me about Ivan Reitman.
Ivan Reitman. Yeah. He's done a lot of great stuff, and he worked with some of the same people, as we'll see. Just some of his top ones. He did Twins with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito. Dave with Kevin Kline and Sigourney Weaver, he worked with again for that. Stripes and Meatballs was Harold Ramis and Bill Murray for both of them. Kindergarten Cop is a personal favorite of mine. I watched that way too many times with Schwarzenegger. And then more recently, not super recent, but he did the movie Draft Day, pretty good sports movie. Kevin Costner is like the GM of the Cleveland Browns. So,
did you know that Bill Murray was considered for the cop in Kindergarten Cop?
I did not, and I can't. That would change it so completely.
It really would.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That would be so different.
The humor would be great, seeing Bill Murray with the kids.
Yeah. It would be great. You put Bill Murray in anything where he just gets to spout off whatever comes to mind, it would be great. But yeah, a lot of the humor in that is because Arnold Schwarzenegger is just this giant, hulking, imposing dude trying to talk to kindergartners and all that. So that's where a lot of the funniness comes from there. But I would definitely watch a Bill Murray version of that in the alternate timeline.
Yeah. The only other movie that I liked that he did that you didn't mention, a personal favorite of mine, is 6 Days and Seven Nights.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen that. That's Harrison Ford, right?
Yeah.
I didn't see that one for some reason.
Really?
But I did see it on his list. It's a good one.
Yeah, it's not awesome, but it's I like Harrison Ford. I like Anne Hesh in that movie.
Uh-huh.
So it's pretty good. Anyway, mentioned Bill Murray. This guy was kind of a prima donna back in the day. I don't know if he kind of still is. Like,
I think a lot of those SNL guys were like him and Chevy Chase, and they all kind of butted heads, and they all had a bit of an ego about them.
I think so. I think what got Bill Murray to do this is because he was friends with Harold Ramis and Dan Aykroyd. Like, he got along with those guys.
Mm-hmm.
But they even famously said, like, they're pretty sure he didn't even read the script. He agreed to do it.
Just improvised everything. Yeah.
Yeah, he just said, I trust you guys to do it. Harold Ramis had written most of his lines for Stripes. You know, whenever he's not ad-libbing.
Yeah.
So he did the same thing. Like, he didn't get with Bill to say, hey, you know, what do you think about this scene or whatever? He just kind of let him have it. And, you know, I heard some other stories with him where, like, he won't ever commit to it. Like, you won't get him the sign until it's time to do it.
I've heard that, too. Yeah, it's like you got to call a number and leave a message. It's this whole archaic process to actually get him to work on your movie.
Yeah.
I kind of like it. It's like just kind of adds to the mystique of it.
Well, he didn't have like a publicist, like he didn't have an entourage. He just did his thing. Like, he's just Bill Murray. You know what though? Like, when he showed up, like he brought it. You know,
whatever he's in, especially during this period, he was doing all these comedies that became super popular. He had small role, but like incredible role in Caddyshack, Carl Spackler, the groundskeeper. Like, anything he showed up in, Stripes and Meatballs, he just always stole the show, like even if he was just there for one scene or whether he was the star of the movie. So he's one of those guys, like, you just kind of put him on screen and let him cook. Like whether it's your lines you wrote for him or he's coming up with his own stuff, like he knows comedy. He knows comedic timing, so it's going to be good.
Yeah, I agree. He's got some good stuff in him. You know, starting on SNL, you probably learned that more or, you know, developed it at least.
Yeah.
But, you know, you mentioned some of his movies from early 80s, you know, Meatballs, Caddyshack, Stripes. These are three movies. I think Caddyshack's going to hold up forever. I think that's just one of the better golf movies ever. I'm a big fan of Stripes.
That might be my favorite comedy ever. I love that movie
really?
So much.
Okay.
Maybe we'll do that someday.
Maybe we'll do that one. You know, he's been a lot of movies. You know, I mean, most recently we saw him in the last Ant-Man movie that's been out there.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So he got a little role. Appearance in that. So
he's done more serious stuff more recently. He's been in a lot of Wes Anderson movies.
Okay.
Lost in Translation, not that that's super recent, but that was him and Scarlett Johansson was a more of a drama he was really good in.
I don't think the J is silent. I think it's Johansson.
Is it Johansson? I don't know. if I ever met her, I'd make sure I got it right.
That's true, too. You know what? We're going to need to bring her in here to correct how we spell her name.
I don't know.
Back in the day, he was considered also as Han Solo. He was considered for Indiana Jones.
Wild.
Could you imagine him?
What a change in the whole butterfly effect of everything after that.
Yeah.
That would be unbelievable.
And he did turn down the role in Big from Tom Hanks.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yep. So
yeah, he
one
definitely
there.
Could have done that.
I think so. He could be a kid.
Yeah.
You know.
He is. It's kind of his on-screen persona anyway.
So he ended up doing Scrooged instead of Big.
Yeah.
So, but
Scrooge is great. We watch that every year.
It's good. I'm glad he wasn't in Big, though. I think Big is one of Tom Hanks' breakout roles as well. So
It is always interesting to think about the whole like sliding doors effect, though, of like this guy turned this role down, the other guy took it, it became an iconic movie or an iconic part for him, like a big part of his career. Like there's so many instances of that with all these classic movies we watch. Like it's very rare where it's like this guy was tied to this movie from the start and it was written for him. Like even this, like it was John Belushi, right? Was
yeah.
who Dan Aykroyd had in mind. They did Blues Brothers together in SNL. He was there too, and he passed away, and so Bill Murray was the one that stepped in. So
yep.
It would have been total. Well, I would have watched that too. I mean, he's got such a crazy energy, a lot different than Murray, but that would have been an interesting version of it also.
I agree. So I love Dan Aykroyd as well. He just has a certain way of bringing his comedy into these. He wrote this. This was something that he, you know, he got the idea for it. Like we said, Ramis helped him with it, but he had the idea. I guess his family has a lot of background.
That's what I read. Yeah, they're into ghosts and stuff. Like yeah. they've got a history of that kind of stuff.
So this was supposed to take place in the future. His initial idea was it was going to be an army of Ghostbusters taking on hordes of ghosts in the future. And then they got...
It was like a chain, like there were different locations.
It was like throughout. A multiverse they were trying to do. Yeah. It was weird, like some foresight there. But yeah, so it didn't work out. I mean, we got what we got, which... You know, I don't know how they would have done futuristic. I think it would have been pretty cheesy if they tried futuristic.
Yeah, oh, especially, yeah, we talked about the graphics and stuff. I mean, and it just benefited so much from being more of just a local, like, it's very much a New York movie. There's lots of New York locations. All the extras in the scene, you can tell they're guys that are just buying a hot dog on the corner. Like, they're pretty authentic. So it really helps the whole atmosphere of it to just kind of focus it more on that one location.
They talked about that, too. They were saying how, at the time... There wasn't a lot of movies being filmed in New York. It was kind of a dirty, crime-riddled place at that time. And they said, no, we got to do it in New York. What they call the greatest city in the world. You had the architecture and everything.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they did. I'm glad they did. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes stories of what they had to go through to film in some areas down there. You know, Rockefeller Plaza was not – it was privately owned, so they couldn't get in and do things, but –
But they did end up, what I read was that a lot of it was filmed in L.A. and a lot of it was filmed in New York. But obviously the whole thing takes place in New York.
Yeah.
So it's sets and stuff.
The big set pieces were in studios.
Yeah.
You know. But Dan Aykroyd, I mean, this guy, same idea. Came with the same upbringing as Bill Murray, SNL. A lot of crossovers. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that. Not a lot of crossovers in their movies, but they're similar comedies, like their comedy style.
Yeah.
I like Dan Aykroyd in this because he... I like him in his comedies. He has this weird way to like speed talk through like instructions and important information. And he does that a lot in this movie. And I don't have any particular quotes at the moment for it, but he, I can't duplicate his genius. Yeah. Right. But he does it in like, if you ever watched Dragnet, he was in there. I think Spies Like Us, he does a little bit of it and he does it in this. Like it's just a cool little trademark of like his type of comedy.
He's a versatile guy too. Like he's really funny. Like just, some of the stuff he's written, obviously when he's on screen, he's a really funny guy, but he's also had like some more serious roles too. Like he could pull off like
My Girl. Things.
Yeah. He's the dad in My Girl. Yeah. I've been debating if we're going to show that to the kids. We always do movie night. I'm like, that might be a little rough for him. Might traumatize him.
Hey, you know, you got to give him a full range of emotions when you're showing stuff. That's a tearjerker.
Emotional education.
But even like he shows up in Pearl Harbor as well. Like he was the analyst that, one listened to.
We mentioned you mentioned Pearl Harbor once before. I think I said I tried to forget that movie. So yes, I am reminded of it now that you said he's in it. But I kind of forgot about
it. I'm gonna
that.
Beat you down until we bring it to the.
I'm not watching that movie again. You can't make me.
So
yeah, Trading Places, Blues Brothers. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but those are two iconic ones. You ever see The Great Outdoors with him and John Candy?
Yes,
that's a favorite of mine. We watched that. He's got to eat the. John Candy's got to eat the 96-ounce steak, I think it is. Dan Aykroyd's
the meat sweats.
Yeah. Those movies are all great.
So fun fact with John Candy, too. I'm not John Candy. I'm sorry. Dan Aykroyd. I love John Candy, but it's a whole other conversation with him, right? I don't know the last time you watched Temple of Doom, but John Candy's in Temple of Doom. I mean, no, I'm sorry. I keep saying
John
Candy.
You're saying
John Candy. Dan Aykroyd is who
is he really?
Yeah, he works at the airport when they get on the plane. So the opening scene when they're at the Obi-Wan club, right? And then they get to the plane.
Yeah.
Dan Aykroyd's the airport technician.
Yeah, it's been a few years since I've seen Temple of Doom.
Yeah.
But next time I watch it, I'll have to check it out.
I want to say I watched it a few months ago and I noticed it. And I remembered as I was doing research.
That's so random.
Oh, I forgot he was in there. Like, it's just, he doesn't have any speaking lines, I don't think. He just He's just the guy. Like he's in a jumpsuit, and he's like, "All right."
And you said that came out the same year as this, so like he was like starring in one of the biggest movies ever, and he was also just like a non-speaking nothing part in his other big movie.
Just making an appearance. So Harold Ramis, as we mentioned, Egon Spengler did a lot of the co-writing for these. Worked with Bill Murray a lot. You know, he didn't have as big of a acting career, but
he was more directing and writing. But he's got to be one of the top five like funniest guys ever in Hollywood. He's had so many things that he wrote Animal House. He was in Caddyshack. He directed and I think wrote also just so many movies. National Lampoon's Vacation.
Yeah,
just I don't know. His humor is like right on my wavelength. So anything that he's involved with, I was always in on.
Have you ever seen Orange County?
No. Is that Jack Black, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jack Black.
That was back in like high school or so. Yeah, I don't think I ever saw that one.
Tom Hanks' kid is in that.
He's Colin the star Hanks. Of it. Okay, yeah.
Yep. It's good. Jack Black's funny in it. It's Jack Black being
I like
kind
Jack
of goofy.
Black. I don't know why I never saw that movie.
You should.
Yeah.
Well, Harold Ramis is in that. Like he's, you know, brief role in there or whatever. Uh-huh. So yeah, as I was coming across, I forgot about that movie too. And I was like, oh man, I gotta go watch Orange County again. Yeah, that was 2002 when that came out.
Okay.
Yep. So then, of course, you know, Ramis died in 2014, unfortunately.
Right.
So he didn't get – well, we'll get into Afterlife after he wasn't
– Yeah, they worked him in. I like how they integrated him into it. It didn't feel cheap or exploitative or anything. It was kind of an honest
– good homage,
way to
good respect.
Him in. Yeah.
Yep. So Sigourney Weaver, I mean, this lady's like – if you've seen Alien, which I know you have –
love it. It's the best.
That kind of her breakout role. So
Ripley.
This was a change for her from not the same role as Alien, obviously. I mean, this was more of she's surrounded by a bunch of comedians in this.
Yeah.
You know, and you see what can she do. And I thought she did pretty good.
Amazing.
She's
another one. Anything she's in, like she does dramatic stuff. She can be – it's typically the comedy is not really her go-to, but whenever she's in there, she's good. She can play off these guys that are like comedic geniuses. Like her and Bill Murray scenes are so good together. Like whether it's – her just as Dana and just being herself and like just kind of laughing at like this kook's advances on her, or like when she's been sort of possessed and embodying Zool. Yeah, there is no Dana, only Zool.
Yep.
But yeah, she's somebody that I'm always very happy whenever she's in a movie. Alien, you mentioned she's in the Avatar movies. You ever seen Copycat, the like serial killer drama kind of movie?
I don't think I did.
She was a star of that one. I was like, probably late 90s, I want to say, but that's a great one. I think it was her and Holly Hunter. She's in Dave. We mentioned that before. Another Ivan Reitman movie. Holes is a favorite of our kids. We've watched that one.
Oh, I love Holes.
Yeah. Yep. Working Girl. She's had an awesome career. But yeah, she's great in this.
And then Rick Moranis, I love. He was a great fit for this, I think. Originally supposed to go to John Candy, as we were talking about John Candy. Candy wanted to do too much with the role, and they said, well...
Oh, is that why? Okay.
Yeah.
I could see him in it. He could have the same glasses he's got on in Vacation when
he
go to Wally
World.
He
wanted to be a German guy with dogs, and like he was trying to bring a whole depth to this character.
Yeah.
And they were like, nah, maybe next time, John.
Yeah. You know? we're not looking for someone... I mean, Rick Moranis does steal the show a bit. Whenever he's on, I always am dying laughing.
He's great. I love him. Like, he doesn't really... He's getting back into acting, but...
Yeah, I heard he took off for a while, like just
his
raising
wife
his family
sick.
And everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's been in great things. I mean, Little Shop of Horrors is great. Spaceballs, which he's in with Candy.
Spaceballs is the best.
Yeah. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Those movies, I love those. Little Giants, the kids football movie is great.
He's doing another Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. He's coming back for that.
So there's oh my God.
Three of
That's
them
so,
out there.
That makes me so happy.
I think there's a fourth one coming now.
Oh, we'll be there day one.
I think it's in production, yeah. I liked him in, you ever see My Blue Heaven with Steve Martin?
I didn't, no. That was like when you search for Rick Moranis, it's like one of the first things that comes up. And I remember, I was like, man, why have I not seen that movie?
It's a goofy movie.
One of my blind spots.
It's Steve Martin trying to play like an Italian mob gangster, and he's in witness protection. And
yeah.
And Rick Moranis is the FBI agent. Like, not really a believable FBI agent, but
because he's probably not
he's
going
like
for
5'7", you know, 150 pounds soaking wet.
It's so funny seeing him and Sigourney Weaver next to each other. Like, obviously, they come together with the Keymaster and the Gatekeeper and all that. And, like, she's got like a foot on him. It looks like he's like this little tiny guy. She's this like tall, beautiful, statuesque woman. It's just really good casting to have the two of them playing off of each other.
I like how he's always locking himself out of his apartment in this movie.
Yeah, that's every
like,
time.
I don't know if that was planned or he just kind of added that.
Oh, it had to be. It was so good. Way. Every time the door closes behind him, he's like, guys.
And then Ernie Hudson rounds out this cast as Winston. You see Ernie Hudson everywhere. I mean, this guy, over 250 credits.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of TV. He's been in movies. Yeah.
Yep. So my favorite thing with him is probably The Crow. He was good in The Crow. Guilty pleasure for me was Airheads.
Oh, yes. That was going to be the first one I mentioned. Airheads, amazing.
Yeah.
I need to watch that again. It's been a long time. But that one used to be on, I think, like Comedy Central a lot. And I would just watch it all the time. Yeah. Yep.
So it was good Brendan Fraser movie, too, like, you know, before.
Oh, that's another one with such a good cast. Brendan Fraser, Adam Sandler, Steve Buscemi.
Yep.
Just good stuff.
Chris Farley's in there. I mean.
Yep. Yeah. Judd Nelson. Isn't he his, they're like the cops. Him and Ernie Hudson are partners or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, Harold Ramis is in that as well. I don't know if you notice he shows up, right? Anyway, so good cast in this movie. They got it right for the time. I was trying to think of other people who should have been in this movie, and maybe we'll get detailed on who they considered or whatever. But overall, it's held up because all these main actors have gone on to do other things. And that really makes a movie hold up better, in my opinion.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, when we did Varsity Blues and we're talking about James Vanderbeek, who went on to do essentially nothing, it's hard to go back and watch him in this movie because he didn't really do anything else. If Tom Cruise was in Varsity Blues and now you watch Tom Cruise for 30, 40 years, and you go back to, oh, that's a young Tom Cruise. Look how good he is.
And I think it's just like, I mean, James Vanderbeek's been a working actor. He's been getting parts, but like he hasn't had any big memorable things really since then. Like he had that, Dawson's Creek, and then it's like he's on like TNT shows and he's kind of showing up here and there, but nothing super memorable. Like these guys, like we just rattled off all the things they've been in. It's like every guy's got half a dozen like iconic movies that have held up over time. So, I really do think, like you said, that helps the movie as a whole
hold up. It shows the quality of actors that were around in that time frame, that era of movies.
That was like a golden age for funny guys. Like,
yeah.
Just we've got a lot of them in here, and like Candy didn't take the role or they didn't give him the role. Chevy Chase, like all those SNL guys. Eddie Murphy, like that was like just the Hall of Fame all at once. Like those guys were all at the peak of their powers.
Yeah, for sure. So this movie, you kind of mentioned it at the top. You gave it the plot. I like the way you described it, where I think you called them grifters.
Yeah, they are.
Grifters trying
we're to... We're ready to believe you.
So this movie itself, I thought it kicks up pretty nice, right? Like you got the lady in the library and she's doing her thing.
Great opening scene, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm getting at, right? So the first, you know, 5-6 minutes is like, you know what you're getting into. You're like, what's going on? And I noticed they don't even show the ghost.
Right, not till they get there.
And because I thought I missed it. I'm like, did I just miss it? So I rewound it and I forgot. You don't
see
it
until
later.
See her, like her hair blowing back in the wind and it's kind of like lit up and like it's obviously terrifying, but you don't actually.
Yeah.
See it yet until they
I'm instantly hooked at that point again. Yeah. I'm like, oh, like I forgot about this, you know. I don't know how they got the number to call Dan Aykroyd at this point. Like, is it a phone book? Because this is before any Ghostbusters commercials. How do they know he's the guy to call, right? Unless it was it the same university, maybe. Maybe they just know they had some kooks working in
I know it's the New York Public Library, so it wasn't like the university library, but I don't know. I guess they'd gotten their name out. I don't think they weren't on their own yet, right? So they didn't have commercials.
Right.
Maybe we're missing the timing. Maybe they had just gotten out on their own.
No, they weren't because Bill Murray was doing the electrical grid
with the
girl and the guy, you know.
Such a great scene too.
Yeah, but that's when Ray comes in and he's like, come now, you know.
Oh, that's right.
So it's before they got started, but because they weren't kicked out of the university at that point. But I love Bill Murray doing the psychic test, by the way, too. He's just
you get the perfect glimpse into what Venkman's all about. Like, he's a ladies' man. You see right when Sigourney Weaver shows up, he's all about just trying to romance her and trying to get on a date with her. So here you got this beautiful blonde girl and this schlub, as you like to say.
Yep.
And I love that, like, the guy, he's getting it wrong, he's getting zapped. And, like, there's the two of them, they don't ask to see it. Every time she says something, he's like, that's correct. Can you see through the cards? How did you know that? He just says she's right. And then he gets one right at the end, and he still zaps him anyway.
Yeah, I love it.
It's the perfect ending to it.
His gum comes spitting out, right?
Yeah.
So they get their business started, right? So they go in, they go to the library, and they're like, now they realize, like, hey, we can do this. I mean, you can clearly tell that Bill Murray could give a shit about ghosts.
Yeah.
He's just like, at this point, he doesn't have a job, right?
Yep.
So he's like, all right, guys. Like,
that's what
I'm
all
in,
of them. They're just looking at, I mean, Ray is probably like the most passionate about the thing, but they're all just looking to stay afloat, and they lost their grant money from the university. So they're just trying to make a living, basically.
And you see how Ray is such a pushover. You know, he puts about a third mortgage on his house to
start the interest rate and everything. They said, they have no chance. They buy that firehouse out. That's such a great
scene.
They're
trying to negotiate with them. And
everything. What does he say? It's condemned. It should be condemned, this and that. And then Ray comes sliding down the fire pole. Like, this is great. Yeah, can we stay here tonight?
I love it. I love it. So they get right into the cheesy commercial. You know, we're ready to believe you.
I love that line.
So a fun fact with that, too, when they were promoting this movie, they actually created that as an 800 number. Where you could call
it.
You could call it.
And I love when they do things like that.
It was a recording with Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd saying, like, hey, we're out busting ghosts right now. Leave a message. Or I don't know if it'd leave a message, but it was something along those lines. So that was good promotional.
I like when they do. I saw a trailer. This is so far off topic, but there's this movie. What is it called? It's about an imagine. It's like a horror movie about this, like, teddy bear that's like this imaginary friend, but really he's, like, making you do awful things. And it was, I forget his name, but, like, I saw the trailer, and then at the end, it was said something like, you can call this number to, like, hear him talk to you or something like that. And I remember thinking, I was like, oh, you don't really see that much anymore. Like, that's something, they used to do back in the day with Ghostbusters and these other movies where it's like, tie it in and, like, oh, I could be excited when I see the trailer or when I see the movie, I go home, I can give it a call.
There was no internet, right? There was no internet back then, so you couldn't just turn it
on.
And
some movies did that. Once the internet did come around, you could go on, you could try to solve puzzles or Easter eggs, and you could get more information or, like, exclusive looks and stuff. I always like that cross promotional kind of stuff.
It's smart to me. It's kind of guerrilla marketing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You find a different way to do it besides a billboard. What I noticed is when he first gets to Dana's apartment, so she has what happens to her eggs frying on the thing or whatever. Yeah. So,
and that's one of those practical effects. It's so cool the way that, like, that's, I don't know how they did it, but it seems to actually be happening. It's not like computer aided or anything.
Yep.
It's pretty cool.
But she has a bag of Stay Puft marshmallows in there too. So you notice that back there, which is nice. That's actually a brand that Dan Aykroyd made up.
Yeah.
So it became real in 2010, I think, is when someone actually created them. But
they did make actual, because I know it's like Jet Puffed, I think, is like the typical marshmallows you see if you go to the grocery store.
But it took them, 25 years before.
I didn't know they actually produced and sold.
In 2010, they started producing them. So they're out there, I believe, somewhere. I didn't go buy some. I don't care that much. But it was a made-up brand. And, you know, a la Quentin Tarantino making up his own brands.
Yeah.
You know, Dan Aykroyd did the same thing.
Cool.
I like, this is, Peter Venkman, Bill Murray being him. He's in her apartment. Like, this is just a great scene. With him in her apartment was such a great scene. He's got the, whatever the stick is, where he's puffing something, right? And she's like, what is that? Like,
it's technical.
It's technical. Right. So then he's trying to leave, and he's trying to hit on her, and, like, this wouldn't fly this day and age.
Oh, it's so, well, so
he's like, we'll just do this. No, I need you to leave. He's like, yeah, but, and he's, like, being very pushy with her.
Yeah, she's like, oh, he's going in one room. She's like, that's the bedroom. Nothing's happening there. He's like, what a crime.
It's awesome. He's like, look at all this junk food. But like I said, that's why this movie, there's so many good, funny scenes in this that just subtle. You know, like, you're not going to tell a joke at a party about Ghostbusters, but if you're talking about Ghostbusters, we're smiling the whole time we're doing this podcast right now because we're so excited. You know, it's great.
I love he leaves. Like, he goes through the whole thing. Obviously, he's, like, trying to come on to her and get a date, and he's, like, hardly even investigating what she came to.
He has
to
no idea what he's even looking for at this
point. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And, like, he leaves. Like, she has not reciprocated his advances in any way. And he's just like, I'm madly in love with you. He says, that killed me, even watching it, like, 100 times later now. So she's, like, pushing his face out the door, like, okay, you got to go now.
She has a good line to him where she says, you don't seem like a scientist. You're more like a game show host. And I thought that was probably spot on to what he
is. Yeah, he is. He comes in, he's hitting the keys. Like, they hate it when I do that. This torches them. Like, that's right, boys. It's Dr. Venkman.
You know, they finally get their first call. Now they get the hotel, the ballroom.
Cedric
scene.
Hotel, yeah.
Oh, man. This was one of my favorite.
The best.
My favorite spots. You get to see, like, their laser packs for the first time.
Yep.
And the whole don't cross the streams. Like, this could be bad. You get a real taste for what they're doing, right? So you go from this scene into the 80s montage scene where now suddenly there's a bunch of ghosts all around all of a sudden. Like, where are they coming from? Nobody really knows yet, you know, but they're out there. You even had a Casey Kasem appearance in here. If you listen to
Larry
the radio.
King, back to back, the two of them,
I love it. I love it. But then you get into, you got Lewis back again, where now you got the terror dogs, as they call them, are coming out of the cases.
All right, who brought the dog?
Like, Rick Moranis, like, he delivers some good shit, man.
I saw that he improvised all his lines on, that party that he's hosting.
Oh, really?
He's talking about, the Nova Scotia salmon is $24.99 a pound. All that whole thing, he apparently just, made up on the spot, and it was all, one take. This is incredible.
So that's impressive to me, just to be able to spit that out. I wish I could see more of what scenes and which movies were ad-libbed. I wish they reported a lot more of that. Yeah. Maybe they don't want to take away from the credit to the writers, but give credit to those actors for being able to ad-lib that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. And I'll bet this movie's got so many scenes that were left on the cutting room floor that are probably really legitimately funny. Like much later on, we had the Judd Apatow movies. You got guys like Will Ferrell and Seth Rogen. And they would give you that content. They'd put the movie out, and then they'd have, deleted scenes and blooper reels.
That's how you sell the DVD at that point. I got 12 deleted scenes.
Exactly. I don't think there's a lot that exists as far as that kind of stuff from this, but I'd love to see it because we only got a glimpse of what they could do.
So we want a director's cut of Ghostbusters 1984.
Yeah, release the Reitman cut.
The Reitman cut. Okay, so Dana and Lewis turn into these dogs, if you will. Then this is when the movie starts... I shouldn't say start picking up, right? But it's really
gets pretty
when,
serious,
the action starts coming in. Yeah. Right? You got Peck from the EPA coming in.
William Atherton, the all-time punchable face guy in Hollywood. Yeah.
And everything he's in, too.
What else is he in? Do you know, I know him from Die Hard. He's the reporter, and Bonnie Bedelia punches him in the face at the end, and then from this. But it's two iconic roles. I read that after this movie, he was getting, bullied, basically. Anytime he was in New York, people were giving him a hard time. He was getting in, altercations with people. I guess you did your job well if you're that hated to play a character.
I wonder if Joffrey from Game of Thrones gets the same.
I think so, yeah. Wasn't there a thing?
Nobody likes him.
He kind of stopped acting for a while. It's you almost played the role too well.
Right. I love the banter between him and Bill Murray, too. We talked about just how good of actors these guys are.
They got such disdain for each other.
Yeah, it's very... I'll say believable, but it's believable.
Yeah. Right?
So they get them arrested. They're doing their thing, which is great. So now they're getting called to the mayor's office, and I love how casual Bill Murray is about it. Got a date with the mayor, guys. Ed wants to talk to me.
Yeah.
As he's making his way to the mayor's office.
Lenny or something, right?
Yeah. That was it. It was Lenny. Perfect. That's right, because he calls him that in the office. Lenny, baby, all these voters, It just smooshes him a little bit, which is great. The whole scene in the mayor's office was awesome.
Or you could accept the fact that this city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
What do you mean, biblical?
What he means is Old Testament, Mr. Yes. Mayor. Real wrath of God type stuff.
Exactly.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes.
The dead rising from the grave. Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
That whole scene, though, is what's good. And then for some reason, the guy brings in, the Pope or whatever.
Yeah, the Archbishop, I think he is, or something. Yeah.
Makes no sense, but whatever. You be mayor how you be mayor.
You see a lot of priests and stuff at the end, as they're going up for the final battle, you see there's a whole row of priests blessing the scene and everything that's kind of in the background, but it does appear quite a bit in this movie.
They get released by the governor and they say, okay, go solve this problem, right? They
know exactly. Because he convinces them, he's like, if I'm wrong, then we'll just go back to jail and we'll go happily. He's like, but if I'm right, you will have saved the lives of millions of registered voters. So he's like, all right, yeah.
So what I noticed in that was when they show up to the bottom, they're at the foot of the building, everything about the start. It's actually the first time you see Winston in a uniform. He's not in a uniform any other time.
Yeah, because probably it's only the hotel otherwise, right? And he wasn't with them yet.
Well, there's a whole montage after he gets there, and he's driving the car with Ray and doing different things, but he's never in a uniform, which I thought was kind of weird.
Yeah, well, I know maybe now is a good time to talk about, apparently they cut a lot of that role. They were going for Eddie Murphy at first.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing Beverly Hills Cop, so he turned it down, and so they got Ernie Hudson, and then apparently the studio wanted Bill Murray's character, Venkman, to be given a larger role than he had, and that came at the expense of Winston and his backstory and everything. So
I see.
Yeah, I know we always talk about, your favorite character, your least favorite character. It's my answer for that was, Winston, but it's not his fault. I love Ernie Hudson. Anytime he speaks, I like it. He's got a few good lines. He's got, I love this city and all that stuff. But yeah, they just didn't give him a lot to work with compared to the other guys.
Well, they switched his role, like you said. Everything you said was correct. I read the same thing, you know, similar research, right? So they gave him this role to kind of help the audience along. So the scenes where he's asking questions, and you know, Egon's like the Twinkie scene. Egon's explaining the Twinkie.
Yeah.
Like, what's this mean? How does this work? You know, and it allows the viewer to understand what's going on. You're not just watching.
Gives them a reason to, because otherwise, why are they going to verbalize any of this? Why are they going to say it?
Exactly.
So yeah. Right.
So it paid service to the viewer by adding this character in there, and it's very subtle. But it's like when you hear about it afterwards, I'm like, oh yeah, like most of his lines that he talks about is just that. Like it's him, you know, at least at the beginning of when he
first
joins.
What's this all about?
Yep. When he speaks, he's good. He has
He's got great
delivery.
Like
it's just enough presence as an actor too. Like you know what I mean?
There's a steady paycheck in it. I'll believe anything you say.
Right. So they get to this the building. Apparently it's only on the 22nd floor.
Yeah, it made it seem like, but it's like the Empire State Building practically. Yeah. They're going all the way up. That did occur to me. It's like 22nd floor. They were dead from going up the stairs, but that ain't so bad.
They'd
be tired.
When they show some of the clips, like the overhead of the city, it looked like it was one of the tallest buildings in the city. I'm like, well, that's at least 50 stories, you know, not 22, but yet, you know, for the sake of the movie, that's what it is.
Ivo Shandor ran out of funds to purchase more selenium.
Good reference. There it is, you know. So the rooftop scene is actually pretty good, too. I thought we talked about the special effects and the graphics or whatever you want to call them. Some of it, you know, every time they did the terror dogs, I think that was really the claymation that
tough,
they tried
to
do. That was pretty tough. But everything else I thought was really good. Even the lasers from the proton packs.
Oh, yeah.
You know, solid for 84.
Yeah, you get good explosion at the end when they cross the streams and everything. That looked pretty good.
Yeah, overall, the ending was good. I mean, like I said, you're bringing the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man in. You know, again, Bill Murray with his lines, you know. Like,
yeah.
Let's think about this, guys. He's a sailor. He's just looking for some ladies.
We get him laid. We'll be fine.
It's just the way he does it, man.
It, that's why it's so good is because, like, they've got a real plot to this. There's real stakes. Those, like, life and death situations happening. But, like, they still seamlessly put in all these one-liners and funny zingers and stuff, like even up through the conclusion, like the final battle, you're going against an ancient Sumerian god and you still got time to peel off a few one-liners and it doesn't feel out of place or forced. Like it feels like it fits their character.
I agree. Like everything in there was just like, this is real. This is what they'd be saying in that situation. You know, at the bottom of the building and they're getting ready to go in and you got, like I said, the priests and you got different, everyone's hanging around cheering them on as they go in. And now they save the day, right? So now they go up there, they blow up the Marshmallow Man, they kill the girl or whatever they do, and they come back down, and suddenly there's people at the bottom of the street, they're all selling T-shirts. Like, there's Ghostbuster shirts. Like, you didn't see those before. Like, did you just print those in the half an hour they
were
up top?
Listen, I don't know how much time you spent in New York. It's an opportunistic place. I guarantee you, if this really happened, there would be a guy selling T-shirts 30 seconds after.
The other part of that, too, is when they first... this whole scene kind of kills me. They're at the bottom of the building, and, like, the little earthquake happens, right, with the ground moves, and the car falls in.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, oh, what's happening, right? It's all policed off, like, not with the rope. They had, like, the horses, like, the wooden horses blocking people. So there's a scene later when the girl with the – when Flat Top shows up and something happens, and now the ground's rumbling again, and suddenly – everyone's on the other side of the police barriers. Like, people are falling in the holes. Like, they're like, they can't get their balance because they're standing up. Like, what are you doing? Like, why are you over there?
All those scenes are fun. Like, you could watch them 5 times and see something different every time. Like, the guy falling in the hole, the guy losing his balance, tipping over here. Like, there's a lot happening on screen.
Like, if anything, you'd say, well, I'm going to step back 100 feet so I can see. You're looking 50 stories up.
The looky-loos, man.
Like, you're just straining your neck.
Yeah,
standing
they're going to be there.
At the base of the building. Like, you're not seeing anything.
Yeah.
I don't know. Nitpicks for me. That's what I'm saying. Like, come on, man. Like, but it was good. It's a good scene.
Yeah. You know? And we talked about Ernie Hudson and his lines. He's got the great one where they kind of nominate Ray to step forward and speak to Gozer.
Are
you a god? No, he's like, Ray, if someone asks you if you are a god, you say yes.
I like his tools and the talent line was always one of my favorites, right? Because you can use that in, like, everyday life.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you do something cool. We got the tools, and we got the talent.
Yep.
Well, that's the plot of the movie. That's just kind of busting through those scenes. I think that we hit on some of them already, but we're talking about maybe unanswered questions or just kind of fun facts about this movie, like things we noticed with Ghostbusters. You know, I mentioned earlier how, you know, Halloween's everywhere are loving this because you get the Halloween outfit. I think this was the first movie that introduced the like the no ghost logo, you know, the circle with the line through
it. Yeah, that's where it came from, right?
Like, was that a thing before Ghostbusters? Like, was that a, did they create like,
I think that's an original thing from this, yeah.
You know?
Pretty sure.
I think so too. I'm giving them credit.
Yeah.
I'm saying right here on the double take.
Yes.
That Ghostbusters started that.
They are finally validated after all these years.
Sweet. I'm sure they really care what Mark thinks on the double take, right? My opinion matters.
Bill Murray is listening intently right now.
Good, good. We're going to pay him some homage. They, I realized, too, how much smoking they do in this movie.
Oh, yeah. All those movies back then, it was like everywhere. Just casually lighting up. They're in the fire station. They're in the mayor's office. They're in the apartment everywhere. It's just cigarettes everywhere.
Pretty sure you could smoke in a hospital back then. That's
Yeah, you could smoke on an airplane, restaurants, everything.
So one reference that Ray makes, too, he talks about his childhood. He went to Camp Wakanda.
Yeah, is that what it was? That's what it sounded like to me. And like anytime watching it since, obviously, the MCU and Black Panther and everything came out. That's what I hear, but I've never had it in my head afterwards. I never remember it to look it up. Like, what is he actually saying? Because it sure sounds like Camp Wakanda.
It's Wakanda. I watch movies with closed caption on for just that reason.
You mentioned it.
Right. So it's spelled differently. So it's not the same Camp Wakanda. I believe Wakanda is an actual place. So there's no relation to the Marvel Universe.
Okay.
Wakanda.
No vibranium, no T'Challa.
Not to my knowledge. They haven't discovered it yet anyway in Camp Wakanda. But yeah, Wakanda and Marvel is with a K, and this one is with a C. So there you go. But what about you? Anything in there that stood out to you as...
Well, as far as like behind the scenes, like it's fun to think about like the possible alternate casting and things like that. We mentioned some of them, like Eddie Murphy and John Candy. And I know Harold Ramis obviously wrote the movie with Dan Aykroyd, and he wrote the character of Egon without having in mind that he was going to play him himself. And some of the things I saw, that they considered Jeff Goldblum, John Lithgow, Christopher Lloyd, Christopher Walken, all of which are just amazing to consider them in those roles. But apparently, like he just identified it with too much, and he wasn't even really looking to be an actor. I think his passion was more with the writing and directing side of things, but he was like, I kind of need to play this character. It's just too fitting
for
me.
What was Jeff Goldblum doing in 84? The Fly?
When was The Fly? Yeah, that had to be around then.
Because I'm picturing Jeff Goldblum from Independence Day, but that's 15 years later or whatever.
Long time.
So,
The Fly's got to be around then. That's got to be early mid-80s.
I don't know if he would have done good with that. I mean, it would have been cool to see it, but...
Well, I mean, you think of... I mean, obviously, the first thought is him from Jurassic Park. He's... Dr. Ian Malcolm,
right.
The scientist.
But that's even later than Independence Day, right?
Right. But I mean, maybe he would have channeled some of that sexy alternative scientist side for it. It wouldn't have worked for Egon.
It wouldn't have worked. No.
Yeah. But
even Christopher Walken, like that, like he was too much of a, he still had his gangster theme going on in 84.
And I'm at the point now where I can't picture Christopher Walken being young. It's like I'm picturing Christopher Walken right now putting on the Ghostbusters suit, and like it's not really computing in my head.
He'll be dancing through the ballroom, doing his thing. He's a tap dancer, you know.
He's the Fat Boy Slim video. But yeah, even Christopher Lloyd, like he did the scientist thing with Back to the Future, and Doc Brown was like high energy. Like none of these guys give off Egon energy.
This is before Back to the Future, right?
Yeah, that was like 3 years later or so.
85? Well, 80, in the movie it's 85, so it might be like a year later, right?
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I don't think any of these guys would have really fit. John Lithgow is like amazing actor, and he can do comedy, obviously, like Third Rock from the Sun and everything, but I can't really picture him as Egon either. Maybe he's the closest one of those.
I thought he pulled it off well because, one, he has good chemistry with Bill Murray and clearly Dan Aykroyd. He did a good enough job where you notice him, but you don't notice him.
Yeah.
You know, you bring in one of those other guys. Like a
and he's all
Walken.
Deadpan. Like I read a note that he told himself never to smile in the movie. Like that was part of his character's personality. Was never going to smile. Like you got Annie Potts is Janine, the secretary. She's like making advances on him the whole time, and he's not pushing her away, but he's also not really encouraging her either.
He's an introvert. Really.
Yeah, he's got the whole, she's like, oh, what do you like to do? I play racquetball. He's like, I collect spores, mold, and fungus. Like just in the dullest monotone.
Well. Yeah, it played well. But yeah, I couldn't picture someone else as him in this movie. You know, we talked about Eddie Murphy possibly being in here initially, but I read something that you know, as much as the rumors say they wanted him in it, Ivan Reitman said he was never a consideration.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. So I don't know who has more of the authority in that. Like, my guess is when Aykroyd wrote it, he's working with him on SNL, and he's like, oh, yeah, he'll be a good fit. But then I think maybe when Reitman got involved, he was probably like, well, again, like, you wouldn't, it wouldn't be a small role for Eddie Murphy in 84.
Yeah.
Like, he was on top of the world in 84.
And you know what? I think this, maybe this is an unpopular opinion, but, and even given that they cut Ernie Hudson's role a lot because it wasn't Eddie Murphy, but, like, if you try to put Eddie Murphy in there and give him a huge role too, like, that might be too much. I know that might be sacrilege to say because he was, like, super-duper star at that time. He was, like, the funniest guy in the world. But, like, you got him and Murray. Maybe, I mean, it certainly could have worked. They're all such funny guys. But that would have been a lot. I don't know. I think you kind of needed that
movie,
more grounded guy to balance it out a little bit.
No, I agree. I think Eddie Murphy was another one when he was doing Beverly Hills Cop and stuff. He was very – he had an entourage. He was another one. He was very much a prima donna.
Yeah, he was
– I mean, he earned it, I guess, right?
Yeah.
But he was very much the same way where he wouldn't commit right away. You know, he might verbally say to his agent, hey, I'm going to do this, but then he wouldn't do his thing until it was time to do his thing. Because that's the ego that these guys probably had. I mean, I'll chalk it up to that. I'm making guesses, of course. But
yeah, at that time, like, he was the star of the show. So this is more an ensemble. It's a team.
Yeah.
And so how would that have played? I don't know.
I mean, he was with Dan Aykroyd in Trading Spaces.
Trading Places, yeah.
Trading Places, sorry, yeah. Trading Spaces. That's a TV show? Yeah.
It's all good. I called Gone Baby Gone, Gone Girl for about 5 minutes there, so you're forgiven.
Nice. So, all right, so this movie has – I always enjoy, like, the 80s fashion when I watch these 80s movies.
Oh, yeah.
And what stood out to me the most was Dana's apartment, her bedroom and the living room furniture. You know, you see that now, you probably only see that at a retirement home in Florida.
Yeah.
Because that's who's living down
very
there,
very dated,
right?
Yeah.
We had two living rooms as a kid, which sounds kind of weird. We had, like, a living room with the TV, and then we had, like, a sitting room where, you know, my mom would go. And
like,
whatever.
The den, the family room.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, like, den's probably a better word for it. And I just remember having, like, a similar couch like she had in there. And I want to say even, like, our spare bedroom had, like, that puffy, like, headboard.
It takes you right back to that time period.
It did.
Yeah.
It did. I was looking. I'm like, that's not a set piece. Like, that's just the style. Like, that's probably actual furniture they had in the apartment.
I think when people hear 80s, they think, like, the big hair and the clothes that they wore and, like, neon kind of colors. But, like, for me, like, one of the first things is, like, the furniture and, like, what a house looked like. Like, the old kitchen, like, the old appliances, the wallpaper everywhere, all that kind of look.
Well, her countertop where the egg cooked, it was, like, the tile.
Yeah.
Right. So that was something. We had some of that as well. Like, the counter was tile, and you're like, oh, it's the worst thing to clean. Like, nobody wants it now.
What were they thinking?
That's the one thing that stood out for me.
At one point, I know when Venkman sees her, when she comes out, she's with another guy there. He's like a musician or whatever.
Musician, yeah.
And one of the things he says to her is like, oh, one of the things I love about you is your fashion sense. She's got on like this multicolored sweater or whatever.
He's like, I respect you, and I respect your fashion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Perfect.
I love it. What actors make you think of this movie?
Like, this is their prime spot. Like, I think.
Yeah. So if Bill we go Murray through Bill Murray, I know your answer is going to be Caddyshack. Like, you think of Bill Murray, first movie that comes to mind.
I think so. Even though it was a smaller role, like, man, that's a tough one because he's unbelievable in this. But yeah, Caddyshack was like a small role, but he just went, like, he went for it. He's got the whole crooked mouth in his face and the way he talks and the Cinderella story and all that. Like, for me, I think it would be that. But
it's in the hole.
Yeah, it's like 1 and 1A, I think, between this and Caddyshack for me, for him at least. What about you? Are you Ghostbusters for him?
I think I'm Ghostbusters for him. Like,
yeah.
I enjoy Caddyshack. I don't love it as much as you do. Like, I could watch it whenever.
Few people do.
And I'm probably biased because we just watched Ghostbusters and here we are talking about it. I reserve the right to change my mind when we do Caddyshack.
But, yeah.
but yeah, this for me, especially after rewatching this, you forget this is the Bill Murray that you want to see in every single movie he's
so
in.
Yeah, so good.
So for me, it's definitely going
to
be.
I love the first image you see, like when he's about to do the zapping test on the guy and the girl. And on his door, the door to his office, it's written, Venkman burning hell. Like, you just get a great idea. Like, okay, this guy just gives everybody a hard time and like. He's a nut. So, yeah, he's great. Did we mention with him, just real quick, I don't remember if we did, What About Bob? Have you seen What About Bob with him and Richard
Dreyfuss?
That's
a
great Bill Murray role also. Yeah, he's just like the most annoying guy you can't ever get rid of. That's such a good one.
Yep.
But, yeah, I think for Bill Murray, I'd go Caddyshack. Dan Aykroyd, That's tough. He's got a bunch that are all right up there between this and Trading Places, Blues Brothers.
What are those movies that you love as much?
I love Ghostbusters more. I do love them. I think I would say Ghostbusters for Dan Aykroyd. What do you think?
I might do the same, actually.
Yeah.
You know.
Are you a Celtic Pride fan? You're from Massachusetts, right?
I am from Massachusetts, but
I don't think that's well loved, that movie. I like it.
That's not a movie that I'll, you know, that's not going to make it on rewatchable.
Yeah, it's not the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think, honestly, for the main three stars, I think even Harold Ramis.
Ramis.
Yeah. All three of them for me is Ghostbusters.
You corrected me for Scarlett Johansson's pronunciation. We both got some work to do, yeah, I guess.
I'm not here for my pronunciation, that's for sure. But yeah, I think for all three stars for me, it's this movie. This is the first one I've seen them in. You know, this was, regardless of what they're in before or after this, to me, this was the one that kind of sticks deep. So
yeah, for Ramis, definitely. I mean, he, like we said, he mostly was more writing and directing. Obviously, he appeared in a lot of movies, but Egon's just iconic role. This is his biggest one.
A close second for Harold would be probably Stripes, because yeah, I've seen Stripes a lot.
Yeah, and him and Murray again.
Yep.
And yeah, Ernie Hudson got to be this, even though there was, you wish it was a bigger role or whatever, but like, you got to put it over Airheads or any of the TV stuff, The Substitute he was in with Tom Berenger, any of those. But what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's probably Ghostbusters.
Right?
You know, I mean, there's a lot of things he's in that I enjoy, but I think this is
how about Sigourney Weaver for you? Because I know you're not an alien guy. So
this is probably for her too, to be honest with you. I know her from a lot of things, but yeah, I've seen Alien. I got to rewatch the Alien series. You know, but
I think they're making another movie and like a TV show also. That Alien's still rolling.
I heard that.
But yeah, that, for me, that Alien is her. She's just, that's like all time role.
I'll have to go back through and see that. But as of today,
go watch Copycat, like we mentioned. That's a great one. You'll like that if you like her.
All right. Check that out. Some other Easter eggs I caught in this movie. There's a couple of times, again, I watch with closed caption, Egon calls Lewis Vince.
That's what he says his name is when he's got like that brain helmet on, when they kind of capture him and they got him at the headquarters.
Yeah.
And
the salad bowl with the...
Yeah, exactly, yeah. He's like, my name is Vince Clortho. I wish I wrote down. It's a whole long,
insane
line.
Oh, maybe I missed that.
Line.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what he says after he's possessed. So, yeah, his name is Lewis Tully, right, is his actual name. But, yeah, once he's possessed, I don't know where that came from or what that has to do with anything, but he says his name is Vince Clortho, I think.
Oh, I appreciate you explaining that because I was like, what is he talking about here? Where does this Vince come from? So
yeah. And but with Rick Moranis, I want to transition now to, like, favorite lines or favorite scenes.
Sure.
I think the hardest I laugh, and I just laughed through this whole movie. There's so many great lines. When he's possessed and he goes up to the horse and he's trying, he's like, are you the gatekeeper? Are you the keymaster? And the guy, it's like the carriage ride he's giving, and he runs away. He's like knocking things over. The way he runs is completely insane. Like, his arms and legs going over. He's like, you will perish in flame. You will perish in flame. Just such an insane line. That's so funny to me. I think I laugh harder at that line than any of the other ones. Even though there's probably like 15 lines that are more remembered and iconic from this movie. That one just kills me.
Him talking to the horse, you know, be ready for the apocalypse or whatever he says to him. Yeah.
What's your favorite line? If you have to pick one line from this movie, I know it's an impossible task, but
it is an impossible task. I think honestly, right from the beginning, you hear like Bill Murray when they're in the library, when they're walking through the library.
Oh, I think I know what you're gonna say, and this is my other one with the parish of flame. Go ahead.
Wait, can I finish?
Yes.
Can I finish?
It's all you. I'm showing support here. Go for it.
Well, when they're walking through, and this is where Bill Murray is still, he's not a believer yet at this point, you know, and they're like, you know, Ray's all excited that like the slime on the Dewey Decimal cards.
Yep.
And he's like, get a sample of that. And he's like, somebody blows their nose and you want to get a sample of it? And he's like, he's touching it, but he's not. And then it gets on him. And he's like, ew. The sarcasm of Bill Murray in that, because that's what every single person is thinking when they're walking in there and they're saying, this is gross. I'm not touching this slime. Like, my daughter plays with slime and I'm not touching that. Right. So I see this and I'm like, that's gross. I'm not touching that shit.
It's just oozing off. Yeah. Is that your favorite line though? That part there? Cause I was going to say from that same scene, it's where they're going through and the books are stacked up.
Yeah.
He's like, you're right. No human would stack books like this.
That was pretty solid. It's hard to pinpoint my favorite, like, quote in that, because we talked about a bunch already that we got through. Don't cross the streams is one that you love.
Yep.
To the point where, fun fact of that was, when I first started podcasting, that's the name of the podcast that we were going with.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we were calling, so Casual Nonsense. available on Tuesdays, you know. Initially, it was we were going to do a movie podcast, and I, you know, we came up with the name "Don't Cross the Streams" because of this movie and because of that scene. And then, you know, we pivoted to casual nonsense, and now when we came circled back to the Double Take, I didn't want to go back to "Don't Cross the Streams." Mm-hmm. I like Double Take better personally, but yeah, that's where it came from.
That's
like,
awesome.
You know, Ghostbusters has that much like deep roots to me, so
yeah. And that's another one you could just go up to anybody anywhere in the world, just say "Don't cross the streams," and they're like, yeah, Ghostbusters.
Yeah, how many times you said that like in a men's bathroom, you know what I mean?
Like, yep.
Like, come on,
that
guys,
is an opportunity, I mean? For it.
You know, you mentioned the "if someone asks if you're a god" line, that was good. I really like, honestly, like the simple subtlety of Bill Murray when they first get to Dana's apartment, when they get to the 22nd floor, and he goes, "Hey guys, stairs, where did they go?" They go up.
Up, yeah. Yep.
So things like that.
How about "back off, man, I'm a scientist."
Anything Bill Murray really is fantastic. And then, of course, the cats and dogs living together scene is great. So there's too many to narrow down.
Yeah, there are. He's got too many. Yeah. I like when he's in the apartment with Dana when she's first possessed. And she's like, "There is no Dana, only Zool." And he's like, "Oh, what a lovely singing voice you must have." Like, he's faced with this demon god, and he's still cracking jokes right there next to her.
Like, my favorite scene overall, like, without quoting or whatever, was probably the ballroom scene when they first...
I agree, yeah, the hotel.
One. You really see when That's they fun. Use their proton packs, the whole when they're trashing the like with the tablecloth. He's like, "Oh, the flowers are still standing,"
yes,
and
he pulls
the
thing, one.
You know. So I think that whole scene was great. You know, what I was mentioning earlier about when Dan Aykroyd, like, speaks fast and he comes out and he's holding the trap. And then, you know, all the guests are around there. And the guy's like, what is that? And I'm going to screw this quote up. I wrote down. I tried to get some of it. He's like, "Yeah, it's a class 5 roaming vapor."
That's
right.
It's a
really nasty one, too. You know, like, you know, it's something like just the way he does it. It's fantastic writing because, like, what the hell is he talking about? Right. But it's just a bunch of made up shit that fits into this movie. It's awesome.
And maybe that's a jumping off point for Afterlife. I love that he's got the role in that, and he's got the kid podcast, he's called. Like, he listens to, like, his, like, weird mystery conspiracy theory podcast. Yep. And he's, like, the one listener, like, and he's got that same delivery. Like he's, like, he's smart, he's educated, but, like, he's sort of nerdy and, like, kind of in on the joke. Like, he's... I forget what it was. It was like episode 72 or whatever. Like, oh, yeah, you know.
Episode
like
46, it really finds its footing.
Yeah, there you go.
So a few other Easter eggs I found on this before we get too far out of there, too.
Yeah.
And there's some crossover, too, to the Afterlife, which we'll get into in a moment, too. I love, like, so the movie's in 84. One thing I liked was there's a couple scenes where they show, like, the two towers of New York.
Yeah.
You know? I like when older movies show that. It's kind of nostalgic, and he's like, okay, cool, like.
Yeah.
You know, because you want to remember. You don't want to forget. Like, I don't know anyone in that. I won't get into that details. But it's nice to see that in movies. And you see that in the older 80s and 90s movies.
Yeah.
You know, so I like when they keep that in. They didn't revisit it and take it out.
Yeah.
I think
they
didn't
pull a George Lucas and do some CGI after the fact.
Right. Or something, right? You do see a couple times the Stay Puffed billboards around town.
Yep.
So you start. You don't notice it at first.
Yeah, because you have no reason. The first time you watch it, like, you don't even think about it. What's that? Yeah,
you're just like, oh, it's marshmallows. Like,
yeah, and then afterwards it's like, they were planting the seeds there.
Yep. He mentions Tobin's spirit guide at one point, and this is actually there's a D&D book that references, like, it's called Tobin something, and we'll have to bring
really
it.
Okay.
Yeah, I was trying to find the exact name.
Now, is that
of it.
Before or after Ghostbusters? Like, did they get inspired by that
I think
line?
It was before. D&D's been around for a long time,
right?
So they turned it into a D&D type game, and I think maybe I'm not gonna pretend I understand the full history of what I didn't go that deep into it, but there's a Tobin's Monster book or whatnot in
D&D, okay,
and I think it might have came out after.
I thought that was just something totally made up that he just
it's a thing actually. It's a real book.
Cool.
I found you can actually find this book on Amazon. I'll put the link if anyone wants to check it out after. But there's a book out there you can get that has a lot of these monsters that.
Like a compendium or something
that's
like that?
That's the way, a compendium, okay. I knew I pronounced that wrong, so I appreciate you jumping in.
I got you, don't worry.
But yeah, then Ray mentions, and it's actually an error, but he mentions Tunguska Blast of 1909, which is actually 1908, because I looked it up.
That was a real thing, too?
It was a real thing.
Oh, my God.
And they make
I thought
reference.
This was just improv lines.
Yeah,
he was
no.
coming up with on the spot.
You know, again, on closed caption, I see it, so I paused it. I'm like, let me just look this up real quick. That was a real thing in Siberia. And they make a reference to it in Afterlife, which was kind of cool. But he has the year wrong in this, so maybe unless the internet's now wrong and Ray was correct back in 84. I don't know. But either way, it was just one of those like big disasters that happened. And it ties into the whole Evo Shandor.
Yeah.
You know, like there is some history to like, there's a lore to this Ghostbusters situation as you find out in Afterlife. So we're talking about Afterlife. We're going into this here.
Yeah. We'll get into the sequels now, maybe.
So Ghostbusters started, they started a whole thing. Like they were like the cartoons and the comic books. And this is all stuff because of Dan Aykroyd. Like I said, he started this entire thing. This didn't exist before he got in there. I don't know if you watched the cartoon. There was cartoons in 86,
yeah, back in
87.
The day. I'm pretty sure I had a Ghostbusters lunchbox. Yeah, everybody was in it.
Right? Like, yeah. The cartoons were good.
The game on the original Nintendo, they had a Ghostbusters game.
You own that, don't you? Do you own every Nintendo
game? I do.
Game?
I got it in my house. I'll go get it for you. Yeah.
How many Nintendo games is it?
677.
You have them all.
Yeah, now I'm outing myself as a total dork here. Yeah. Yeah,
thanks, Mark.
Yeah, let's use now. Which character could you be? My answer is Egon for that one. Absolutely.
You're collecting your spores.
That's
and
right.
Fungus. Yeah, there you go. So let's stick to the movies for a moment, right? Because we never got a TV show for Ghostbusters, and we don't need one, in my opinion. It's too late to do a prequel because it's 84, right? You're going to do a prequel.
I mean, who knows? They've done it for later.
That's true. So the movies itself, did you watch Ghostbusters 2?
Yeah, you know what? I know people don't tend to like that. I remember I watched it a ton when I was a kid, so I really do like it. Like, I think if I watched it now, I'd probably be like, yeah, this doesn't stand up to the first one. But, I mean, Viggo the Carpathian, why am I dripping with goo? All that, like, I've got fond memories of that one because I watched it so much when I was younger. How about you?
I forget that one. I've seen it a handful of times for sure. I'll have to watch it again, I think. I'm okay watching it again. I just like a movie to be a good movie.
Yeah.
And I think because of my nostalgia from this one, I would watch it just on that momentum alone.
Yeah.
You know, but the...
Yeah,
the,
I might put that on soon, seeing as we just watched this one.
So the picture of Viggo is pretty much something that was iconic too, like the painting that's in the whatever, the art museum or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a bar downtown here called Coughlin's.
Here in Raleigh?
Yeah. It's not open anymore, but it's called Coughlin's. It was an 80s theme bar.
Okay.
So Coughlin is a name from Cocktail. It was the name of the bartender. So it's called Coughlin's. But you walked into this bar and it has like Mario Brother like scenes across the wall. And they had a big picture of Viggo like above the bar on there. And you walk in and you know, anyone who grew up in the 80s or whatever. Like,
yeah, you know what it is.
Like you walk in there and you see all this nostalgia of stuff. And when I think of Ghostbusters 2, I think of that bar. You know, didn't go in there a lot of times, but a couple times in there, I'm like, oh, this is cool.
Yeah, and I know that, like, nostalgia has been almost like weaponized. Like that's almost like the only reason to make certain things. Like it's just to play on people's nostalgia.
Yeah.
That being said, I tend not to care. Like I eat it up anyway. Like,
oh yeah.
Like
take my money.
Stranger Things is like my favorite thing going right now. And that obviously they have the Ghostbusters costumes. There's a lot of inspiration from Ghostbusters and a lot of the movies and shows from back then, but I still eat that up. I don't know if there'll come a point where I get sick of it, but I don't know. I'm always ready to dive back into the 80s.
We live in the old glory days, man. You gotta, it's fine. It's fine. So they tried to do a Ghostbusters reboot in 2016.
I want to hear your thoughts on this first.
This was the female one. So you had a lot of good comedians, right? Like the other girls in there were funny, but...
SNL again, Kristen Wiig.
Yeah, a different version. You know, I've seen it. I wish I hadn't, to be honest. Like no, like I like the actresses in it, you know, but they didn't... If they would have done nostalgia in this one, if they would have brought back some of the originals, they could have done back then what Afterlife did, you know, 5 years later.
Well, I think there was... The reason they didn't is there was some kind of rights, contractual, hold-up kind of thing.
Then just say no. Then just don't do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I get that.
Or call it something different. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, there's a way to do it, right? Because I love Melissa McCarthy is, like, hilarious.
Yeah.
Right? So you put her in any of those roles. But you're watching this, these remakes that came out, then there was a stretch where they did a lot of remakes, like Point Break remake, which was awful. You know, even honestly, even the last three Star Wars movies, you tried to making Star Wars Episode 7 like Episode 4, and like, come on, man, like you could have leaned into it. Like you partially did nostalgia, but you didn't really, you know, you could have leaned into it more, and it would have been great. But whatever, that's a Star Wars talk for another day.
Yeah, we'll get into that someday.
But everything about this movie compared to the first one was awful. So that's why I was hesitant when they came out with Ghostbusters Afterlife. I'm like, well, I don't want to watch that.
And yeah, you only just recently watched it, right?
Yeah, I watched it 2 days ago. And I wish I watched it sooner, because now, like, I only watched it because we were doing this podcast about it. And I said, well, I'll check it out. I want to have an opinion.
It really was, like, respectfully done. Like, it had a lot of funny lines, but it had really good tie-ins to the original. And obviously the way they bring in the original cast of the Ghostbusters. Like,
it's fantastic.
It was absolutely fantastic. And I'm pretty sure that was Jason Reitman, right? Ivan's son directed that. So that... you would think it's in good hands, because, like, he's going to respect the legacy of his dad.
And that may be why you got Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd in it, because they wanted to pay homage to Harold Ramis.
I don't actually know who directed the female Ghostbusters one.
I don't care. Yeah, I don't care.
All right, I got to at least just put my thoughts out there on it.
Okay, sure.
I'll probably go down a notch in your eyes on this. I think the thing with me is it's very rare that I watch a movie and I'm like, man, that sucked. I hated that. Like, there's very few movies. I can count them on one hand.
You watch movies through, like, a mom's rose-colored glasses.
I do.
You
know? I find the good things in
them. You're the best clarinet player on the stage.
Yeah, like, I don't think that movie, the reboot, the female one, is it anywhere in the same league as the original one. But I do remember having a good time. I feel like it was way overhated. I remember Chris Hemsworth was, like, kind of the Janine role. He was really funny. He's always good when he has a chance to be funny, like the Thor movies, the later ones. So I will say, I did enjoy it. My wife, my kids, we all like it too. But yeah, it's not in the same level at all of the original. But I feel like it got, like, just blasted. Just, I don't know if it was the fact that it was females or just the fact that they didn't have Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd and them in it. That was probably a big part of it. But I feel like it's overhated, that movie. I think it is a fun time.
We talk about the nostalgia. It's hated, in my opinion, because... you called it Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Like, if it wasn't,
and it didn't
called...
really have any real tie-ins. Like, that's right. Why the new one I liked a lot was they really, a lot of thought obviously went into, okay, what happened before and how can we tie it in? Like, the whole plot, like, Egon moved out to, is it Oklahoma, right?
Yep.
The dirt farmer, he's out on it, and he's, like, continuing the work. He's trying to stop Gozer and Evo Shandor and all that, and, like, he kind of became estranged from everybody else. Go ahead.
So I watched these movies back to back.
Yes.
I watched the original Ghostbusters.
I haven't done that.
Took my notes.
One after the other, but that
would
be good.
And then the very next day I watched Afterlife, because I was like, okay, I got my momentum going. Let's figure it out. So I started writing down everything that I noticed, like, as far as throwbacks. So there's a scene that I never noticed in the first Ghostbusters where, and I'm not sure which part it is. I think it's when they get to the building and Bill Murray hands Egon a Nestle's Crunch bar. And he says something like, hey,
you earned it or
you
something.
You earned this, buddy. And he's like, oh, thanks. Well, when they, in Afterlife, when she finds the uniform, she pulls the wrapper out. It's in his uniform.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so man, I got to watch it again. That's so cool.
The attention, the detail is awesome. So in Afterlife, when she finds, like, his lab under there, right? And maybe we'll do Afterlife at some point. But the premise is, like, it's Egon's grandkids, and they move to this place where he was, and they find his lab. And
he just recently passed away.
And he has all the old Ghostbusters stuff in there, right? If you're looking around his lab, the salad bowl that Rick Moranis had is there, like, with all the little dots on it.
Like a year since I watched. I got to watch it again, because there's no way I would have missed that.
You see it, and then later on, podcast, the kid puts it on.
Yeah, oh,
you
that's know, right.
So
okay,
it's got the white chin strap and everything, so you recognize it. There's the Stay Puffed marshmallows are in the movie, of course, right? They mention the Tunguska blast of 1908, like when they're in the cave, it's one of the years that pop up.
Yeah.
So podcast actually mentions it by name because, again, closed caption.
Right.
Like, you know, when they first get to the house, all the books are stacked up like they were in the library. So you're like, okay,
that.
little throwback. They're like, okay. And then the last thing I noticed was there was a Twinkie in the glove box.
Yes.
Ecto-1. So it was like kind of a throwback to the Twinkie scene.
Yeah.
So
when they're shutting off the grid.
Yeah. There might be more. Well, there's more if you watch the two post-credit scenes. I don't know if you got a chance to see that.
I did, but you'd have to remind me.
The first one was Bill Murray and Dana Barrett, and she's given him the psychic test.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So she's holding the cards up.
That was great,
He's getting every single one of them right. And he's like, I don't know why you, like, testing me here. I'm really good at this. And she's like, you mocked the cards, didn't you? He's like, yep. And he's like, and she keeps buzzing him. It's pretty funny. And then the last one. It's kind of a miswriting thing. They must have added it later, but it's Winston buys the house, the firehouse.
Yes.
So you see him walking in there because in Afterlife, he's looking at Ecto-1. He's like, what'd they do to you? He's like, we're going to fix you up. And then they show him in the firehouse. It's all kind of condemned and broken down, but the car's back there.
Yeah.
So I think they're setting the stage for the next.
And I think I've heard he's going to have a big role in the new one, which I'm excited about.
He's been funding. You find out he's been funding Ray's bookshop.
Yes.
The whole time.
Is it like an occult paranormal bookshop, niche thing?
And he's like, he's going to make a profit someday, you know, and it's been like 30 years or whatever, right? Dan Aykroyd's character mentions that they turned it into a Starbucks. You know, I don't know if he's saying it in passing or maybe someone lied to him. I don't know. But then you see it at the end. But anyway, so those are some of the tie-ins. In addition to this, the regular nostalgia you get from just those
guys. I'm so glad you liked Afterlife. I knew you would.
I'm excited.
When you told me you hadn't seen it, I'm like, oh, man, you're definitely going to like it.
No, I'm excited about it. I really like the young actress that's in there. I thought she did a great job.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can put Paul Rudd in anything.
It really does have a good cast. It's got Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things.
He's okay. Like, he was probably the worst part of it, to be honest.
And he's not, like, standing out. Right. Carrie Coon is the mom. Have you ever seen The Leftovers? She's amazing in that.
Yeah.
It's really good.
It was good. Yeah, it was good. So anyway, so those are the tie-ins that I found. I don't know what other extra stuff that you notice. I mean, if you talk about maybe nitpicks for Ghostbusters, I mean,
why? Well, yeah, like what?
Just
there's no reason to.
It's just the special effects, and we talked about that, like the terror dogs.
I mean, at the time, that probably looked awesome. Like who was seeing like crazy ghosts going across the screen and the streams from the proton packs is like that was all new and exciting. So inevitably technology ends up making that obsolete, and we look at it now. That's like if you go back, like now you can play like a PS5, and if you go back and play the original PlayStation, you'd be like, I can't even tell what's happening on screen. It's so blocky and pixelated looking. So that's just what it is. But yeah, it still holds up just with the writing and the acting and the performances, the comedy of it. It's great.
Yep, I agree. And the last thing I think on our list here at this point was probably just the music. I mean, we can't
talk about
Ray Parker Jr.
Yeah.
You know, his one hit wonder
situation. It's got to be the most iconic movie theme song ever, right? What else could there be?
That's probably it. So they initially approached Huey Lewis.
Yeah,
did you catch that one?
Yeah,
yeah. And he just did Back in Time for Back to the Future. Like people think
people
think it's Power of Love, but that was already a song he had, which is in the movie.
But wasn't Back to the what years Back to the Future? That wasn't it after Ghostbusters?
He
because I was going to say, oh yeah, he went on to have like an iconic.
Yeah, he must have already committed to it before, so maybe it was in production. But like his note was that he didn't want to do another soundtrack. He already did. But it worked
out.
Wasn't
going the Kenny Loggins route of all these movies.
That's another one, right? I mean, Footloose came out the same year, Top Gun shortly after that.
He was cooking.
Yep. But the Ray Parker song, I mean, totally iconic. That's another throwback in Afterlife with the cop.
Yep.
When they get arrested, and it's like, you know, we get a phone call. And
who are you going to call?
The pause.
So perfectly delivered.
Who are you going to call?
I cheered when he said that today. Yeah.
It was awesome. So, yeah, if you haven't seen, if you like Ghostbusters, which obviously you do because if you've listened this far, and if you haven't seen Afterlife, I recommend you get it. It's not streaming. I had to rent it on Amazon, which I had to rent both of them on Amazon. But depending on how you get your stream movies.
We've got I think it's DVD for Ghostbusters, and I think we got the Blu-ray for Afterlife.
There you go.
I think they had like a red box. You could buy it for like $4 at some point. We're like, yes,
it's worth it.
It's really good. Got to get it.
I got to up my DVD game, I think, at this point. I usually
Very rarely watch DVDs. I think most people like that now. It's like it's on whatever, streaming on Netflix or Max, they call it now, or Hulu or whatever.
Yeah.
But I would say of every 20 movies I watch, probably one of them is I'm actually putting a disc in. Right?
Like,
it's mostly just.
But sometimes you want to have them to keep them.
Yeah. Oh, we went over my collecting, my spores, mold, and fungus. You know me. I like to collect things. So, yeah.
You got 600 and something games that you're never going to play again. But
I got to fight the urge to collect more things. Yeah.
I love it. My last question to this is I wonder why Chevy Chase wasn't in this movie.
Yeah. He was in with them on a lot of stuff.
You know, you mentioned a lot of like almost castings for different things. But, like, you didn't mention his name, and I didn't see his name attached to this at all.
What I would guess, I know famously he and Bill Murray did not get along. They had, like, a brawl at Saturday Night Live.
Oh,
and
really?
Even their scene in Caddyshack was, like, kind of like they had to make a truce to make that scene. The studio had to – they wanted the two of them together because they were, like, the two funniest people on the planet at that point.
Yep.
And the two of them hated each other so much, and they basically just came to a truce. Like, all right, we'll do this one scene because the studio wants it. So the two of them were not friends at all.
Interesting.
So I would guess like Caddyshack was before Ghostbusters. So as far as maybe that still goes to this day. I don't know. I mean, we could mention even Bill Murray and Harold Ramis had a falling out at some point, and they only finally spoke again shortly before Harold Ramis passed away. Like they patched things up kind of at the 11th hour. So, yeah, I would guess that probably Bill Murray is the reason Chevy Chase wasn't in it. It's like
that's too bad about him and Harold Ramis, because I think
it was such an amazing team.
Collaborated on a lot of things.
They did so many good things.
Ramis
together.
Is a good writer for Bill Murray.
Yeah,
you know,
I don't even know what the reason was behind all that, because I mean Harold Ramis, he was more wanting to be behind the camera, wanting to be writing. It was like Chevy Chase is probably like he wants ego. He wants to be the big star. Bill Murray's getting in on his action. So I don't know what happened with Ramis and Murray, but. Yeah, it is a shame because everything they did was pretty amazing. Yeah.
Well, that's the butterfly effect that you were talking about. Like, what would have happened if they were friends the whole time? Would we have gotten more?
Could have pumped that. Could have been like John Hughes. Just it could have been them that decade just
that's
pumping
what I mean.
Out things.
Like if you have a best friend that is a writer, producer, and you're this comedic talent that he's writing stuff for,
yeah,
you'd be like, let me know when you get something next.
Perfect,
you
know, match. Yeah,
you just and you see that magic go all the way through because you see these directors that work with the same actors a lot. I mean we went through Ivan Reitman's list,
like a Will Ferrell, Adam McKay type of thing or
something.
Yeah,
you know, something like that. I mean, anything Christopher Nolan's doing these days, like he's bringing in a lot of the same
Killian Murphy, Michael Caine,
Tom Hardy,
all those guys. Yeah,
you know, like it's just you work with the same people. You know.
I always like when I see that. Like we mentioned it before. Like Dave was Ivan Reitman and Sigourney Weaver was in that Stripes and Meatballs, and that was Ramis and Murray. Like I mean, it makes sense. Like just any job, it doesn't have to be Hollywood. Like if you work with somebody and you enjoy working with them, you probably want to keep working with them. So same's true in Hollywood.
Any closing thoughts on Ghostbusters here? I mean, I think we captured a lot of stuff. I was really excited to watch this movie. And I'm glad.
Always am. I have to have seen this movie more than 50 times. And like sometimes you say that, like, oh, I've seen that movie a million times. You're exaggerating. It's just to say you've seen it a lot. I'm pretty positive I've seen this more than 50, and it's probably closer to 100 times. I love this movie so much. So, yeah, I'm very excited we got to do it on the double take and have such a good conversation about it. This is just, we can't even say, like, we do some movies, like, oh, if you haven't seen this movie, what are you doing? It's like, everybody's seen this movie. Everybody loves this movie.
I think so.
I'm super happy that you really liked Afterlife. And yeah, we're both looking forward to the new one coming out. So,
all right, well, thanks for listening, everybody. And check you next time on The Double Take.